Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Recap Race Analysis here on the Cycling Day and Extra channel, or if you're listening on the podcast, available on Spotify. And as always, I'm joined by Patrick Blake of Aldo Cycling and one third of the Echelon Cycling Podcast. And today, it's another one of Tirreno Adriatico 2024, Stage 4. And I mean, Patrick, without further ado, what happened on the day?
Not much, to be honest with you. It was 207 kilometers from Aron to Giulianova. The main thing being that there was a quite large 15-odd kilometer 5% climb, which wasn't enough to detach any of the sprinters, but it definitely looked to nullify some of the legs, because later on we had a little bit of cracking from some of the sprinters. We had a break which ended up distilling down to three riders inside the last sort of 30 kilometers, which was Mikko Maestri, Alexander Kamp, and Jonas Abrahamsson. So those three were the three strongest from the initial breakaway, and they went up this final little drag, I guess you'd call it, up to the intermediate sprint. It's only a few kilometers at 3% or so. It's not the toughest thing in the world, but it was enough to distance Tim Merlier, which I found quite surprising, to be honest with you. I do think that a World Tour level sprinter probably shouldn't be getting dropped so easily on something like that, but I do think that maybe the climb earlier on had an impact on that. So that meant that Merlier was out of the game, so Quickstep ended up working for Alaphilippe in the finale. But to be honest with you, I'm not really sure if Merlier would have been competitive, because this was a harder finale than I was expecting. Abrahamsson attacked early and got away from his two compatriots of Kamp and Maestri. And honestly, he was going through 1 kilometer to go, and the peloton wasn't gaining on them. Ineos were leading it out for Pidcock, and then all the other sprinting teams like Intermarché were working for Binny, Alpecin for Philipsen, Cofidis for Zingler, Trek for Milan, and all those teams were sort of lining up behind Ineos and Pidcock. And with 500 meters to go, Pidcock was pretty much left all by himself on the front. So he just decided to light it up anyway, deciding that the chance of him getting a stage victory was very quickly going away from him. So he led it out, and then coming back from a few wheels was Philipsen, who came followed by Milan. Binny went on the left-hand side to try and draft Abrahamsson, who is still up the road at this point, it's worth mentioning. So Binny goes up the left, Milan and Philipsen on the right. Binny moves across from Abrahamsson to try and kind of move over towards Philipsen. Milan has none of it, gives him kind of makes a small bit of contact and gets through the gap. Milan, Philipsen, neck and neck up to the line. Milan's in the saddle in the true track style sprinter that he is, and he just about beats Jasper Philipsen on the throw to take stage 4, and it's Milan's first victory of the week. Incredibly strong performance in the Ciclamina jersey. So the stage standings are this: Milan takes the stage ahead of Jasper Philipsen, Corbin Strong, Binyam Girmay, Axel Zingler, Marius Meyerhofer. Jonas Abrahamsson holds up to 7th place after a very long day in the break. Ivan Garcia Cortina in 8th, Alaphilippe in 9th, given that Merlier was dropped, and Antonio Tiberi, the Italian sniper himself, rounds out the top 10. What do you make of all that, Scott? What do you want to pick apart first?
Well, let's just talk a bit about Jonathan Milan joining a new team, and as you said, very strong pedigree on the track, Olympic champion, unfortunately. In the team pursuit, European champion in the individual. But yeah, in the last few years, we're taking that stage win in the Giro last year was a big scalp for him. He was very strong in the Giro just all around. And yeah, just great to see him win a World Tour stage for the first time for Lidl Trek. And Lidl Trek were really, they were quite good at just not putting too much effort in when they didn't need to. And Skoinch was up there, and yeah, what do you think of Milan? We said he was quite close yesterday as well. Yeah, didn't quite get it there, but yeah, he had looked like he timed it perfectly.
Yeah, the fact that his results so far this week have been 3rd, 9th, 2nd, and 1st, that's incredible, isn't it? To be honest, he's so versatile. The fact that he did a good time trial and he's been sprinting well, which for a guy who's like 80 plus kilos, 190 plus centimeters, all the track plaudits that he has, the fact that he climbs quite well too. I mean, he was climbing better than Merlier, evidently. And, you know, he's going head-to-head with Jasper Philipsen. And bear in mind, Milan's only 23 years old. This is a new hot prospect in terms of the sprinting field. And it's a massive pickup for Lidl Trek to get him in this year, I think. You know, Bahrain might be looking at him thinking, oh, maybe we should have tried to keep hold of him. But it's a big win for Lidl Trek. And, I mean, we've got two kind of mountain stages coming up, so I don't think he will be, you know, hanging on to the top 10 in those. But there's a sprint stage on the last day, so I think that Milan's got a real good shot of taking this Ciclamino jersey. He's going to the Giro d'Italia again this year, Scott, so that's going to be very exciting to watch. But there's a lot of good sprinting talent there, so we'll see how he stacks up.
Yeah, at least they beat him yesterday, Bahrain, we'll say. But in terms of the finish, okay, we need to talk about both Jasper Philipsen and Binyam Girmay. Obviously, Binyam Girmay was relegated a few days ago in the sprint. We all remember that. Terrible train a video for us. But in terms of this one, it looked like he was caught out in the wrong position when we were coming into the finale or towards the end of the stage, because he only had Pidcock in front of him. Pidcock's not a teammate. It looked like maybe they just burn out all their lead out men. And then when the other sprinters opened for their sprints, he was kind of, yeah, in no man's land and was trying to get over on the other side. And yeah, and like you said, Milan just kind of barged them out of the way. But yeah, it was a bit unlucky, and good he didn't get relegated again.
Yeah, I think it was. He needs to be careful, because that was, you know, if he came across more, it might have been another relegation, but it wasn't worthy of a relegation today. But yeah, I think you're right. He did get caught in no man's land. He tried to follow the wheel of Abrahamsson, thinking that was the one to go for. But Phillips and Milan went on the right-hand side. He came across and tried to kind of squeeze it. And he's kind of lucky there's nobody next to him, because otherwise that would have definitely classified as a deviation. So I think Intermarché, they did a decent job today. But like you say, once they ran out of riders, it was just Pidcock on the front. Eventually, Binny was pretty much left isolated, eating wind, trying to decide what to do with 400 meters to go, which is just too early to be sprinting on a draggy uphill. So I think that, you know, Intermarché played their cards as well as they could have done today. I think nobody else was really taking up responsibility, and they were sort of looked to as a person with a big favorite for the stage. And, you know, I think that they did a decent job, only kind of losing out to kind of finishing fourth place is still a decent result, and it's better than being disqualified for relegated in the stage, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was just frustrating, because normally that's like the perfect position to be in with like 200 meters to go, but then you just had that extra 200 meters, so a bit frustrating. What do you make of Jasper Philipsen? Obviously not winning the stage, but crashed yesterday, so maybe that had a bit of a toll as well.
I don't know, it's surprising. I think I thought that he was going to probably win today once I saw that Melia was dropped. I guess that Milan was the only person who could provide some sort of a challenge, but it's not concerning in any way. I think he was looking incredibly strong today. He said in an interview today that he is still kind of targeting the Ciclamino jersey, but obviously with that crash yesterday, it's going to be quite hard. And obviously finishing second place today doesn't help out either. But I think that, you know, Philipsen, yeah, this is one of his first few race days of the year. He's probably still kind of getting back into things, whereas Milan's already done, you know, the whole of the Volta Comunità Valenciana. So he's clearly perhaps a little bit more into the swing of kind of the race pace. So I think that Philipsen, you know, especially without, you know, Van der Poel here as like a lead out, I don't think it's like the big A-list Alpecin team that they've got here. You could say that it's not the full A-list Lidl Trek team, because a lot of them are there over in Paris-Nice supporting Pedersen. But yeah, I think that these two are looking really neck and neck, and it's going to be a really exciting sprint battle for the coming few years, I think, to have these two really on quite level terms.
I mean, you mentioned Tim earlier enough, so I don't really think we need to speak about him. But in terms of Ineos Grenadiers, they had a bit of an eventful finale with Tiam and Arendsman kind of getting caught out by well, I think it was a puncture or mechanical, whatever. And then it was just the wrong time, wrong moment, but they managed to get him back in. I also think there was a bit of teamwork from the guys in the front, getting to the front of the bunch as well to manage the pace, I hope, or else it would have been crazy having their team pulling while one of their guys was chasing back. But yeah, and then Tom Pidcock obviously suddenly found himself towards the front of the finale. But yeah, Ineos Grenadiers, are they going to be licking their lips for the next few stages?
I don't really know. To be honest, I think Ineos, for me, have just been getting things a bit wrong so far this week. It seems like they can't quite make up their mind. I mean, firstly, it didn't start off too well with Sheffield crashing in the TT. Ganna looked good there, but then was dropped big time yesterday on a climb, which I didn't think that he should really be getting dropped on. And then Ganna was being used up as a domestique today, but he looked like he was suffering even in the wheel, so I just don't know what's going on with that. Obviously, Pidcock was the sensible choice today. I think that tomorrow suits Pidcock, considering that the climb, which is like the big one of the day, is 11 kilometers at 6%, which I don't think is enough to drop Pidcock, as long as he's on good form, which I believe he is, especially going into like the Spring Classics. He should be in good form. And then it's got a descent and then kind of a flattish finish where it should be a bit of a sprint amongst GC riders. That's how I see it taking place. So I think that tomorrow is very suited towards Philipsen, but I've just found Ineos to be quite confusing this week as to who they're actually working for, whether it's Ganna in a sprint. I mean, he was sprinting on stage two, but then wasn't today. It's just quite confusing to tell what they're actually trying to get out of this week, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we'll see if tomorrow is answered by that. But that's basically it for this recap race analysis of Trenitalia Adriatico 2024 Stage 4. And we will be back tomorrow with Tirreno, so make sure to look out for that. Hit the like button, subscribe to the channel if you're new here, and check out Patrick's own channel, Audio Cycling, as well as the Echelon Cycling Podcast if you want to see even more of Patrick and myself. But with that, thank you for watching, and we will see you around.